publiclibrary.org.
Bowles, Eye on Weather on AM 930. Overnight, starry. Low near 60. Sunshine Tuesday with a high of 85.
It's Bull's Eye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas on AM 930 WEOL.
Minutes after 4 o'clock, Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Beautiful day outside. Temperatures in the 70s, a nice occasional breeze. Should make for a real nice atmosphere at the Home Run Derby downtown tonight. We will have it for you here on AM 930 WEOL.
Where do you think Carlos will hit from, left or right?
It benefits him to hit from the left side.
All right, that's what coaches said. He said he'd have to wait to check the weather.
I mean, I can't see why he wouldn't swing from the left side because it's a shorter porch and right, not as high of a wall. I would like to think that if he's going to give himself the best chance to win, he'd swing from the left side.
All right, we'll see.
Well, let's see what Michael Wershauer thinks, because we're going to talk about things like the Home Run Derby, you know, as far as the TV viewership goes, whether there's the Derby, the slam dunk, you know, the three-point contest, maybe it's a hockey skills competition. Things that tend to go over pretty well surrounding all-star games. Michael Wershauer is our Hollywood guru, and he joins us right now on the hotline. Michael, how are you, my friend?
Doing well. Good to talk to you guys again.
Well, we appreciate you stopping by, and we're going to come back around to the Derby, slam dunk, three-point contest, all that good stuff in just a bit. But there are a few other things we certainly want to touch on. And, you know, I feel like in the summertime, it's always difficult to find something great and new on TV. It's not exactly the season where usually the best things debut, but there's one that's been getting a little bit of love, pun fully intended, recently. This CBS Love Island show. Is there anything about this that's going to set it apart from, oh, I don't know, the other 15 gazillion reality dating shows that we've seen the last 20 years?
Well, I got to be honest, when I hadn't heard of it when you told me that we were going to talk about it today, so I looked it up, and it sounds kind of crazy. It's been a huge hit in England for the last 5 years. You can actually check it out now, the original version on Hulu, just to see what it's all about. But this show has a lot of elements of a lot of other dating shows, but seems like it's just sort of taking it to like a crazy extreme. Basically, you have your basic premise of 10 highly attractive singles being paired up in a villa in Fiji. But basically, it, where it starts to go off the rails is once they're paired up, they share beds with as couples in a giant room. So there's just a room full of queen-size beds where each of the couples sleeps. And then as the show goes on, they start adding single people to the mix who will try and lure people out of couples into one with them. So there's these recouplings, and then single people get kicked out of the villa. And so there's already this kind of crazy setup, but then what makes it even a step beyond it is that unlike shows like The Bachelor, which are filmed usually months in advance and edited together in one package when they air, this is a show that's being aired as it's happening. So they're filming it about a couple days to a week out and then airing it, and it's going to be on 5 nights a week for, I believe, a month. So it's going to be a really interesting experience as far as a reality show is concerned. One review I saw of the original British show is, get prepared because this is exactly as like summer trashy as you might want it to be. So it sounds like kind of a wild show. I might check it out, and I'm not a big fan of these dating shows.
Matt Douglas was laughing during the description. Are you intrigued? Or are you hooked?
I'm a little fascinated by this concept. It's like a Big Brother meets Bachelorette, and then you threw in kind of the trashy, so maybe a little Jersey Shore thrown in there as well. Those are at least the reality shows I can remember being popular in my time.
Interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like they just sort of threw everything into a blender and saw what stuck.
Great way to put it. I agree.
Yeah. Well, they should rename it Love Island Blender, yes. Blending Love. Well, I think Blending Love is the way you can certainly go with
it. I'm sure
that,
a lot of outstanding individuals will be on that show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Not quite sure how we transition out of that, but
good luck.
Let's get into the box office here. The box office was thoroughly dominated by Spider-Man Far From Home this weekend. Not a surprise. I think that was most definitely expected. Took in an estimated $185 million in its opening weekend. We use weekend loosely. I think it opened up last Tuesday, and you know that first week it netted close to $200 million. It's crazy, and it cost, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think $150 or $160 million to make. Well, what exactly is it that the critics are saying about this movie? Just because it makes a lot of money doesn't mean it's always successful.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of positive buzz coming out about Spider-Man Far From Home. The first one, Homecoming, which was sort of the reboot of a reboot of the Spider-Man series, this time through the lens of Marvel, did really well as well, and I think they carried a lot of the things that made the first film so successful into this one. A lot of humor, a lighthearted tone, kind of mixing that really kinetic Marvel energy and storytelling with the story of just like Peter Parker as a kid, as a teenager who has friends and school and all these things to worry about, in a way that the iterations with Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield didn't. And what I've seen is, from a lot of critics, is that basically this is really the first sequel this summer to break through and have a good performance. We've seen so many sequels and reboots flop already just in the first couple months of the summer, but this one did really well because it kind of kept that high standard of quality and didn't just rely on the Spider-Man brand or the Marvel brand to make it good. They actually, you know, worked on making sure there were relatable characters and that it was that Peter Parker is a character that people could connect to, which is the appeal of him from the comic books. But I think this is really a good sign for Marvel. They were able to sort of, this was sort of the epilogue of this phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, kind of the next chapter after Endgame. So it's a really good omen for them that they're heading into this next phase without the original Avengers doing so well. But it's also a great sign that after last year, where we had Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which had rave critical reviews and won an Oscar for Best Animated Film, and as well as the Spider-Man video game, which was dearly beloved by video game people, it's good to see that the franchise wasn't content resting on its laurels and instead kind of looking for the familiar while building on it and building it into something that, you know, not only popular at the box office, but critically adored.
All right, along those same lines, and you alluded to some of this, but is there an infinite amount of life for Marvel after Endgame? I mean, I don't want to give anything away for those that haven't seen it, but it seemed like they wanted to give a great deal of closure to just about every single character that was in that movie, and that shouldn't be a surprise to you if you haven't seen it yet, but how much life, I guess, is the better question here, left for Marvel after Endgame?
I think that there is a lot of life left in it, as we've seen with Spider-Man, with Captain Marvel, with Black Panther. You have a couple of newer franchises within the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe that have performed really well, and I imagine will continue to do so. Another Ant-Man film will probably do the same. You look at this sort of next generation that they've set up, and they did a really good job of mixing these new characters and new franchises in with the original generation. So as we were, ending the chapter of Iron Man and Thor and Captain America and all these characters that we had grown to follow in these first, 13 or 14 films, you've also started to get a taste of the Guardians of the Galaxy, of Doctor Strange, of these other characters that they're hoping will pass the torch on to the next level. As far as what their plans are with the storytelling, that's really tightly under wraps. Disney and Marvel have been keeping that sort of close to the chest as they're figuring out, their plan moving forward. But I think that Disney and Marvel have come up with a really great formula for these films. You can watch any Marvel movie, and while they're stylistically and tonally very different, I think that you can tell that it's a Marvel movie, and there's a sense of familiarity there. So I think they've figured out this formula. I think they're going to keep applying it to this next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it'll be interesting to see what they choose to do with it, but I don't anticipate it losing any staying power anytime soon.
Well, I think that's kind of the beauty of it, is without having movies that had previously been made, it has that Disney approach where, like the Lion King's, parents want to take their kids to see it because it's their nostalgia. I mean, you have the people who read the comic books who are saying, oh, I've got to get the other people into it. And then the newcomers, too, are just drawn by the action and romance. And I don't know, the movies kind of have it all, I feel.
Absolutely. And I think, as we've seen with Spider-Man, I think we're also going to see with the X-Men here soon, now that Disney has acquired Fox, like taking this very familiar thing, these big famous heroes that we know from either previous movies or the comic books or both, that have, you know, this sort of generational name to them, being reinterpreted in a new way for a new generation. So I think there's a lot to look forward to. Without a lot of, you know, really new stuff, just sort of new ideas applied to things that we've seen and worked before and loved before.
Michael Warshaw, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We'll stick with this Marvel stuff for just one more second here. I've got to throw this out there because I think for a while there, this looked like a foregone conclusion with Endgame. Do you think this will eventually pass Avatar? And I ask that only because they've re-released Endgame in theaters again, almost as if it appears in the court of public opinion as though they are trying to give it one last push to get by Avatar. But that doesn't necessarily look like a foregone conclusion anymore. Do you think there's a legitimate chance it still passes Avatar?
I think it can, but it's got to do it probably this weekend. I'm not sure. I don't think anybody knows quite yet how long Disney intends to keep Endgame in theaters, but it is pretty clear that what they're trying to do is surpass Avatar for that record. They're about $16 million away, which is very doable. If they're not getting in their own way with Spider-Man Far From Home and another Disney property, Toy Story 4, in the theaters right now, pulling eyeballs away from it. But they clearly want that achievement. They want the title of having the highest grossing film of all time. I did read something that James Cameron, who directed and wrote and produced Avatar, is not really well-liked very much within the industry as a whole. So there's a lot of people that are hoping that just that he loses that title. I think Disney really wants it because Marvel has been such a massive financial success for them, regardless of the critical side of it. It's just been tons and tons of money for them, and so to have that one honor of having the highest grossing film of all time would be very important to them. So I'm guessing that they will keep pushing it until they break it, even if it has to come with that asterisk of going into theaters longer and, you know, just sort of leaving it there to make it happen. But I suspect that Disney wants that crown no matter what the cost of it is.
Going to be interesting to see just how far they push that envelope, because I think you're onto something there. I think that at some point people will approach this with the asterisk, no question about that. But I'm anxious to see just how much they push that or how often they put that back out in theaters until they reach that breaking point. All right, a lot of people very excited about the third season of Stranger Things. What kinds of things are you hearing about the third season?
I'm hearing a lot of, kind of mixed opinion, but generally trending in the positive direction. I can say personally, I haven't finished the season yet, but what I've watched, I've enjoyed. I think that they're getting a little bit broader with some of the horror and sci-fi elements of it. I don't know if they're necessarily working as well this season as they did in the past, but what makes this show so lovable and enjoyable are the characters that they have, and they've really pushed the character development of not just the main kids, but the adults kind of surrounding them in a really neat way this season. They haven't been afraid of, kind of staying with the familiar, but pushing that familiarity further and further outwards. So it's kind of fun that the characters have grown with the actors playing them. It's kind of fun to see some different kinds of stories that, differ from the first two seasons. And I'm trying to say this while avoiding a lot of spoilers, but I think overall you just see a little bit more maturity in the stories that they're telling that go with the maturity of the actors. And that to me has been a particularly fun thing to watch. And above all, you know, Stranger Things has been so good in its three seasons of being a great summer binge-watching show that everybody's talking about, one that you can, you know, spend a whole day inside or parcel out and watch one a night and still get the same amount of enjoyment. So I think as far as, you know, its sort of cultural place right now, Stranger Things is still as strong as it's been in this first 2 years.
How long can they continue? I don't know how many seasons are planned with Stranger Things, but it takes place in the 80s, and it seems like the kids are getting older, and obviously you've got to expand on that timeline. Would they carry it into the 90s, or do you think they'd kind of revamp? Because one of the things I enjoy about it, at least when I've had the opportunities to watch it, is they went all in on the 80s theme. Even the score, the music for it, which is original, I think at times has an 80s feel to it. I think that's kind of the beauty of it. If they have to go into the 90s with these kids, I think it would kind of ruin the movie, no? Or show.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what their timeline is. I think, I believe that the Duffer brothers who created it and run it have a 5-season plan in mind. So I think there's about 2 more that they have planned out. I think the 80s thing works so well for them, and it would be kind of hard unless they want to, you know, really wait years in between seasons and let these kids grow up, for them to push it too far into the 90s. And I think that 80s aspect of it is such a signature part of the show that I personally hope they don't go beyond it. But as far as what direction they're heading in after this third season, only the Duffer brothers know. It's still sort of a big, huge mystery to us. So it'll be interesting to see how far they go, but we do know that they have, I think, at least 2 more seasons left in them.
I'm intrigued then. It'll be interesting to see how they keep it going.
All right, Michael, we told you we'd come back around to this. Home Run Derby tonight down at Progressive Field. We're all very excited about it here. I'll be down there tonight. And, you know, we were discussing this a little bit earlier. Got us to thinking of all the skills competitions, for lack of a better term. There are plenty of great ones in hockey. Of course, the NBA's got the slam dunk contest, the three-point contest. Baseball's got the Home Run Derby. Do you have one that you prefer over all the others?
You know, this was a tough question, and this was very hard for me to kind of figure out. I tend to love NBA All-Star Weekend and all of their sort of skills nights that they have, the NBA All-Star Saturday night. But I think the ultimate crown goes to the Home Run Derby right now. The MLB changed the rules in 2015 where they got rid of the outs and they made it a timed competition, so every batter has the same amount of time to hit as many home runs as they can. And it really ramped up the excitement because, you know, you have this sport that has no clock, that is just sort of moves at a slow pace, and all of a sudden these guys are just swinging as hard as they can and as fast as they can. And it really added a very exciting element to it that I think has been present in the last couple seasons. And especially now that you have, like, the slam dunk contest has sort of grown stale. It's really reliant on props or these big kind of elaborate stunts. So it's not really as exciting as it used to be. Hockey has some great skills challenges, which are pretty good. But I don't know. There's something very exciting about this sort of being the only act in town. You know, at the All-Star break, it's sort of the only show that you have sports-wise. I think they've made it very exciting with the time limit. They have some young players. Bigger hitters are coming back into it. Unfortunately, Christian Yelich, the league leader in home runs, and defending champion, is out, but you have a lot of big time sluggers to watch tonight. So that certainly, I think, has my vote right now as the most exciting All-Star Break Skills Challenge.
Yeah, it's a blast. It's a lot of fun to watch, whether you're there in person or you watch it on TV. That is a very, very fun event. Before we get to the picks to click, I want to give you an opportunity to brag a little bit, my friend. NBA free agency has, well, I don't know, I guess it's been alive and well now for the last 8 days and change, and some people are excited about it, some not so much. And, you know, as an Indiana Pacers fan, you guys lost Paul George it's been about 2 years now? Has it been that long?
2 years. Uh-huh.
So it's been 2 years. Uh-huh. Now, at the time, I'm sure that was gut-wrenching, but I would say with revisionist history at stake here, you guys won that deal, didn't you?
Yeah, I certainly think so. We got a 2-time All-Star out of Victor Oladipo. We got a Sixth Man of the Year candidate out of Domantas Sabonis, who has certainly shown a lot of upside. And Really, both teams ended up in the same place, losing in the first round each year. But I think the Pacers' future is a little bit brighter, though. Oklahoma City certainly has now, I guess, a lot of draft picks to work with. They have a couple good young players that they brought in. But, you know, Paul George moving to the Clippers certainly makes me feel better about the fact that he's teaming up with Kawhi Leonard, both of whom were drafted by the Pacers. So it's sort of a what could have been, but I feel pretty good about where they're at now these days.
I don't blame you, my friend. I don't blame you, because that trade, at least right now, 2 years later, looks really good for the Pacers.
It sure does.
All right, let's dive into our picks to click. What should we be watching this week?
Sure. Well, there's not a lot of new stuff hitting streaming this week, but there are a couple of great things to watch that are new to streaming. First on HBO, they have remastered and are finally putting back on streaming their 1998 miniseries, From the Earth to the Moon. It was produced by Tom Hanks and Ron Howard and shows the Apollo program from a bunch of different angles. It's one of the really great forgotten gems of the beginning of prestige TV. So that is certainly worth your time, especially now as we're hitting the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. There's also a couple of big award movies that have hit streaming. The Iron Lady from a few years ago, where Meryl Streep plays Margaret Thatcher, is on Netflix. Bohemian Rhapsody, this year's really buzzed about rock biopic, is on HBO now. And last but not least, you can catch up on the latest season of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia on Hulu. That gang always has it. It's still funny. Worth checking out in the summer heat.
Good stuff. Michael, as always, we appreciate the time, my friend. We look forward to doing this again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Michael, again. Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood guru, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Boy, a lot to digest there. Some really, really good stuff. Love Island. I thought that was going to be a topic we just kind of breezed past, but now it sounds at least a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, it sounds, Temptation Island? Do you remember that one from way back in the day? I was in high school when that came out. That was a big deal. Me and my buddies got together to watch the series finale. Would they stay together? Would they break up? Sort of sounds like it's along those lines. Obviously, it's going to draw a lot of interest. It's kind of that raunchy kind of TV with good-looking people in it, so I'm sure it'll be enjoyed. But, yeah, you kind of got to touch on those topics, don't you?
Sure.
Sounds interesting. That's the best way I can put it.
It does. We are way late for a break. In just a minute, we'll get to Matt in the local news and come back for the final 90 minutes of today's show. Bullseye on the Afternoon rolls right along here on AM 930 WEOL.
Hi, this is Jim Rosenhaus with this date in Cleveland, Indiana.